Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to Q3 FY2024 results conference call of Bajaj Auto Limited. My name is Nirav and I'll be your coordinator. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the initial remarks from the management. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar, Head Investor Relations from Bajaj Auto Limited. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Nirav. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the call today. Welcome to Bajaj Auto's Q3 FY24 earnings conference call. On today's call, we have with us Mr. Rakesh Sharma, Executive Director, and Mr. Dinesh Thapar, Chief Financial Officer. We will begin our call with the opening remarks from Rakesh on the business and operational performance of the quarter, and Dinesh will take you through our financial highlights. We will then open the forum for the Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anand. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the earnings call of Q3 FY24. We deeply appreciate your presence here this evening, and let me begin by wishing you and yours a very happy new year. Indeed, the new year has commenced on a very good note for Bajaj Auto. Yet again, we have delivered a record financial performance with an all-time high revenue, EBITDA and PAT, with PAT crossing the rupees 2,000 crore milestone. This is a hat trick of record setting, with each of Q1, Q2 and Q3 results successively establishing records, and this despite a soft international business environment. Dinesh will take you through the financial performance, so let me focus on the business unit performance. Let's start with the exports business unit. The macroeconomic environment combined with geopolitical issues remains uncertain. While tight conditions remain for dollar availability, broadly the continuing devaluation of emerging market currencies appears to have ceased. However, the economies and customers are still dealing with the impact of high inflation. Overall, our exports stand at about 70% of our peak in FY22, which was in FY22. But there is a 2% improvement sequentially, which means Q3 over Q2 shipments. Africa and South Asia are dragging the overall recovery as they are still at 50% of peak levels. But Latin, Philippines and Middle East are now performing above the peaks these regions reached in FY22. In fact, we have had our highest ever retails in Mexico, which is the second largest motorcycle market in Latin, and overall market share in Latin is also at its highest. The contribution of Pulsar in the exports portfolio has increased from 19% last year to 28% in Q3. This, combined with a better forex realization, has meant that though in Q3 we declined volumes by 4% quarter on quarter, our exports revenue actually grew by 10% and EBITDA by even more. We expect the return to peak levels of performance will be a slow and steady process, as we've been saying. But meanwhile, we ensure that exposures of our trading partners, both distributors and dealers, are controlled and our competitive positions are continuously improved. In Brazil, we broke ground for a new plant in Manaus, where we hope to commence production by end of Q1. The Red Sea imbroglio has caused some delays of about 3 weeks to LATAM and parts of Africa, and we have seen freight rates double to many destinations. December and Jan shipping availabilities have had some impact, but hopefully this is not expected to impair performance on a continuous basis unless there is a wild escalation. Already, alternate routes are being put in place and ordering levels from our channel partners are being adjusted to take note of longer shipping times. Coming to domestic motorcycles, motorcycle industry retails grew by about 11% in quarter three. Festive sales growth did not see much of a fall off in December this time, and this is a very good sign. So in the coming months, we expect industry to grow by 8 to 10%. Bajaj Auto retails grew at almost twice that of industry in Q3. Sales were powered by our focus area of the 125cc plus segment, in which we grew at 36% compared to the industry growth of 13%. This segment, which is the 125cc plus segment, it accounts for 50% of the industry, and for Bajaj Auto, it accounts for 70% of our retails. Our market share in this segment is at almost 31%, and we are now in striking distance of segment leadership. Within this segment, handsome gains in market share were achieved in the 150 to 250cc sports segment, where Pulsar rules at about 40% market share. And this on the back of a highly successful N-Series launch. This market share is up 8 percentage points to 40% from a 32% level in FY23. Pulsar recorded an all-time high sales of 400,000 in the quarter. Our customer engagement program, Pulsar Mania, was conducted in 100 cities with over 1 lakh participants and a viewership in millions. It has solidly strengthened our connect with the youth and biking enthusiasts nationwide. Our strategy continues to be to drive profitable growth in the 125cc plus segment based on product differentiation and sharp positioning. We have a non-stop program of rolling out upgrades with superior features to make customer interface connected and more appealing across the entire range at a breathtaking pace over the next few months, culminating the launch of bigger Pulsars. Leaders generally get disproportionately rewarded by customers for meaningful improvements in successful models. We have witnessed this phenomena in our NS series and in the N160. We therefore expect to make strong progress based on our new introductions, which are rolling out as we speak. By taking not only the market share beyond the current 40% levels, but also expanding the sports segment itself. Just in this year, the segment share in the industry has moved from 12% to 15%, largely driven by Pulsar interventions. In fact, if you look at the delta growth which has taken place, 70% of that delta growth has come because of Pulsar. Coming to commercial vehicles, the three-wheeler BU maintains its rock-solid performance with an overall market share of 77% in Q3 and 80% in the passenger segment. In the advancing CNG-based segment, which now accounts for 60% of the industry, our market share is a whopping 85%. Electric three-wheelers are also progressing very well. We have expanded our footprint to 23 cities now, and volumes in December were over 1,800 units. The reception of our products and our proposition of technology nahi, bharosa vahi is being received very well. Hence, in every city where we have entered, we have raised to a 50% plus market share within 3 months. Going forward, we are going to aggressively scale the EV presence to about 50 cities in quarter four and then 200 cities before the season in 24. Capacity has been put in position, and we are also simultaneously upgrading our network infrastructure as well as capability to deliver a better customer experience overall. Chetak, as mentioned before, supply chain work has improved our capacity and reduced costs, allowing us to open up the network, right price the product, and drive sales. We are now in 140 cities with 160 or exclusive sales and service stores covering almost 80% of the high-speed EV market. Consequently, sales has breached the 10,000 mark and retail market share has steadily increased from 4% in FY23 to 14% in December. In the last few days of quarter three, we expanded the range with a new premium variant, equipping Chetak with further style and features. Chetak's proposition of being fully life-proof, delivered through catchy communication, is being received very well. Our objective remains to continuously drive up volume month on month, and we will now be targeting to breach the 15,000 mark in quarter four. Pro Biking business unit. In the Triumph business, the Scrambler 400X received a very good response from both the enthusiasts and the pros. It is now almost 50% of Triumph sales. In December, both models put together retailed about 2,800 units in just 40 cities. In some key cities like Bangalore and others in Kerala, the heartland of mid-sized classic bikes, we are now already notching up to 20% market share. Our plan is to steadily grow our footprint to over 100 cities by quarter four end, but while doing this, ensure a superior customer experience is delivered. We will also commence high-quality engagement on the ground with potential and existing customers to bring the Triumph brand to life and demonstrate the richness of entering the Triumph world. We commence exports with over 6,000 bikes to multiple international destinations. This quarter also saw a superb response to the all-new Gen 3 Dukes in the KTM range. The Gen 3 bikes strongly showcase KTM's ready-to-race DNA. A new Husqvarna range has just been launched as we speak in January and is expected to invigorate the brand with the aficionados in particular. Combined, we see this new portfolio increasing sales as well as the quality of sales and strengthening the KTM brand franchise. Overall and in summary, our focus will remain unerringly on delivering outstanding outcomes in five business areas which I had mentioned last time too. These are, number one, to drive growth in 125cc plus segment and build the Pulsar franchise through new launches. Number two, drive for 80% market share in three-wheelers and steadily expand e-autos. Number three, ensure steady export recovery with quarter-on-quarter improvement in sales in every market. Number four, expand the Chetak business to 15,000 per month based on new launches and good supply chain support. And number five, scale up the Triumph sales in India and overseas and leverage new portfolio in KTM. With this, let me hand over the call to Dinesh to take you through the financial performance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rakesh. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for taking the time this evening to join us on this call. Let me start by saying that we are rather pleased with our performance, especially given the backdrop of the operating context in which it has been delivered. The quarter stands out not just as a record quarter, but notably is our third successive quarter that we have attained new highs in both top line and bottom line. In many ways, a reflection of a business that is on momentum and resilience in the operating model, which has allowed for this delivery, notwithstanding the fact that we've had continued challenges and volatility across our key export markets. Now, before delving into the financial details, as is typical, let me provide you with a brief overview of the operating context that will set a frame of reference against which our financial results were delivered this quarter. On domestic markets, you just heard Rakesh say that they have been reasonably buoyant. Motorcycles saw broad-based double-digit growth year-on-year in the industry across segments, M1, M2, which is the 100-110cc, and the 125cc upwards. So all segments registering double-digit growth in the quarter on the back of a very good festive season, and notably a post-festive month of December when demand continued to hold out and register healthy growth. The trend of the 125cc market growing faster was evident this quarter as well, and in many ways was contributed and led out by our own performance being well ahead of the industry. As for the CV industry, it sustained double-digit growth over the same time in the previous year. On exports, you've just heard the macroeconomic situation across some of our key markets remains weak and very volatile, which is delaying the recovery that we had hoped for, although we continue to steadily inch our way back. We're doing our bit to tactically navigate this unpredictable situation through very specific interventions, working very closely with our distributors, trading partners, and banking partners so that we can look to salvage as much volume month by month while of course looking to drive and retain our competitiveness across each of our countries. Very quickly on commodities, the purchase basket was by and large favorable. Commodity costs across the board saw softening over previous quarters, most notably in the noble metals part of the portfolio. Steel and lead were the exceptions, where we saw slight inflation starting early on in the quarter. But on balance, I'd say that the overall commodity context offered some tailwind that allowed us to dynamically manage the business for competitive growth and margin accretion in tandem. As for currency, the USD-INR situation has remained broadly stable and range-bound through this quarter. We've had a slight positive on export realizations coming in at 83.2 as against 82.6 in the previous quarter and 81.7 for the same time last year. Now, with this operating context as a backdrop, let me reiterate that we believe we've had a very good quarter, delivering a strong set of numbers. Our growth has been consistent, it has been competitive, and it has been profitable. At 12,114 crores, our revenue from operations for the first time has surpassed the 12,000 crore milestone. It's reached an all-time high, registering a rather robust growth of about 30% year-on-year. And this was underpinned by a 22% healthy volume growth that was aided by a richer mix compared to previous year. You know, we've had more domestic commercial vehicles in the mix. We've had more Chetak. And really what has gone out of the way is the lower priced motorcycle exports. And so that has aided a richer mix. And we've had slight contributions coming in from better currency realization and judicious pricing on a year-on-year basis. From a quarter-on-quarter perspective, the double-digit revenue growth that you're seeing has almost been led out of volumes. This revenue growth is largely attributed to the outstanding performance of our domestic business, which has been firing on multiple counts for some time now. In its seventh successive quarter of double-digit growth, it has delivered an even stronger show this time around, achieving 50% revenue growth year-on-year. This acceleration on the domestic business on the back of sharp execution and impactful activation during the festive season has cushioned the relatively subdued, although recovering export sales amidst continued challenges in overseas markets. While export volumes were down 4% over previous year, the revenue, which is in the ballpark of about $450 million for the quarter, grew about 10% on better mix and improved dollar realization. Staying on domestic for a bit, our performance has continued to be broad-based with each segment, domestic motorcycles, our premium bikes business represented by KTM and Triumph brands, commercial vehicles and electric two-wheelers, all of them have grown scale and registered double-digit growth. Our motorcycles business has maintained a solid run, growing twice as fast as the market in terms of the entirety of the business and about six times the rest of the industry in our strategically important segment of the 125cc plus. Also, as you just heard Rakesh talk, clocked its highest ever quarterly volume of about 400,000 units, with volumes having doubled in just about 2 years. Commercial vehicles continue to do well and have delivered another quarter where monthly volumes have surpassed the 40,000 units monthly run rate, as against a run rate of 30,000 units in the previous year. Driven largely by the rising penetration of CNG on the ICE business, where we have a strong portfolio tailwind. Rakesh has already touched upon the success of the E3-wheelers coming in from the early launch cities where we have already taken leadership positions within a few months of the early launch cities. And encouraged by the prospect that it offers for incremental growth, we have advanced our launch plans across many more cities in the coming months of this quarter. Chetak has started to meaningfully make its impact and presence felt with volumes growing more than three times year-on-year. It has now crossed over 1,000 crores in revenue for us in the first 9 months of this year. And to give you a sense of how it is building out, the revenue in this quarter is almost equal to what we have delivered in the 9 months of the previous year. With an exit market share of 14%, a number three spot on market shares, a new launch in the market, network expansion, impactful activation, we have our eyes set on a bigger ambition and growing further scale in the months ahead. On Triumph, we delivered about 15,000 units this quarter, give or take. Of which about 8,000 was domestic and the rest of it went off to the export markets. And work is currently underway on unlocking capacity at both the back end and front end and that should enable stepped up volumes, you know, in the months starting March, April onwards. Coming to bottom line, our EBITDA touched a new high of 2430 crores this quarter, with a strong 37% year-on-year increase and delivering a margin profile of over 20% for the first time after 6 years. This time around, our margin of 20.1% was up 100 basis points over the same time last year, resulting from better realizations, dynamic cost management, and operating leverage given a larger business, which more than absorbed the impact of the competitive investments that we are making in scaling up our electric scooters business. In sequential terms, our margin improved 30 basis points, with price versus cost and operating leverage benefits more than offsetting the adverse mix primarily arising from the growing scale of the profit dilutive electric two-wheelers. So in many ways, we are now absorbing the impact of the electric two-wheeler scale-up from the robust margins that we've held out on the ICE business. As for pricing, there was no real pricing up that was taken in the quarter. In fact, what we did was to plow back a small part of the commodity cost savings into reducing pricing on select models in domestic motorcycles, Chetak, and export markets to reset their relative competitive positioning. To round it all up, we closed the quarter with a profit after tax of over 2,000 crores for the very first time. And once again, let me emphasize the results demonstrate the resilience and strength of our operating model, given our very unique mix of exports and domestic. Finally, a quick word as we look ahead. We'd like to sustain the momentum in the domestic business and look make it about as big as the festive quarter that has just gone by. Going by historical trends, you'll note that that's an audacious ask, but an aspiration nonetheless. On exports, the effort remains to steadfastly inch our way up. Of course, the recent events on the Red Sea shipping route, which has led to container freights spiraling out and delays in the last few weeks, is starting to add the existing pressure points on the exports business. But something for us to manage. Alongside, we've got a range of businesses that are at various stages of expansion with plans that are well underway. E3-wheelers, Chetak, Triumph. And we'd like to continue to build these out decisively for greater impact and sustainable growth starting this quarter itself. As for commodities, we're starting to see a slight uptick on costs on a few lines, particularly ABS, zinc, polypropylene, copper, rubber, to name a few of the lines where the cost lines are starting to inch up. And current estimates suggest that we will likely have some level of inflation in the quarter ahead, at least from where we see it at the moment. We wait to see how the rest of the quarter plays out. But something for us to therefore dynamically manage so that we can deliver yet another quarter of profitable competitive growth. Lastly, before concluding, a quick word on the recently announced buyback of 4,000 crores under the tender route that we just announced at 10,000 rupees per share. This is in line with our dividend distribution policy that we updated a few months back that the board had approved, which is essentially to include buybacks in addition to dividends as part of the overall payout to shareholders. The growth of the business, the robust cash generation and a strong balance sheet position allowed the company to provide for a much larger size this year, as we expected to close the year with over 20,000 crores of surplus cash. Our cash position as at the end of December is almost 18,500 crores. And FY24 so far is better than expectations and a higher size than the previous year, and a profit pool which is larger in keeping with the stepped-up company performance, is allowing for that larger size compared to the last buyback that we had done. Further, to arrive at the offer price, we considered various factors, including the capital market benchmarks, trends on share prices, valuation parameters, performance of the company, and more notably the recent stepped-up performance, and the outlook that we discussed at the board, and the impact of the buyback. All of these were factors that were actively considered in the discussions with the board. And this was, of course, underpinned by Bajaj Auto's continued commitment and intention to offer a very healthy return to its shareholders. As you might be aware, given that the size of the buyback is in excess of 10% of the paid-up share capital and free reserves, it requires shareholders' approval. The postal ballot for this is currently underway and will close by mid-Feb, and therefore the next steps on the buyback will therefore play out in the month all the way through to mid-March. With that, let me hand the session back to Anand and then open it up for Q&A. Anand, over to you.
Thanks, Vinish. Nirav, with this, we can open the forum for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We'll now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Chandramouli from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my questions. My first question is on the electric two-wheeler product line. Nice to see the market share pick up there. So just wanted to understand what are some of the key factors that have helped the market share improvement there over the past few months, and also going forward, if you could also help us with understanding, you know, what the product pipeline is looking like for the next 12 months.
Okay. Thanks. The key factors which are driving the growth of Chetak is, number one, of course, the widening footprint. Once the supply chain issues got sorted out, two things have happened. One is continuity of and assurance of supply, and the second is to right price the product. We've done both these, and with the network now going to almost 160 cities, we have got a wider geography on which to play. Second is that the product has become, Chetak has become competitive in the sense that it is now at almost equivalent pricing to key competitors. And it's getting a whole lot of traction. We are going to continue on both these. Now, the third factor, which is going to come in play besides network and right pricing, is also the new variant which we have introduced very, very recently. While we were picking up from customers that while the customers were really liking the classic design, the ergonomics of the scooter, and some features like, you know, a very nice tail lamp and the halo, etc., one constant issue was around the console and around certain connectivity features. The new Chetak, combined with its tech pack, which further elevates the performance, plugs this gap as well. So besides the metal body, the classic and elegant styling, various features, standout design, the performance, particularly in terms of top speed, is improved. There is a TFT display, very elegant TFT display, and offering a lot of connectivity features. And our very initial sort of feedback in the last 2-3 weeks is that it is being very well appreciated. This in combination with the, so we have two versions now, Urbane and Premium. They are going to drive the sales. The network exercise will continue. By early Q1 of next year, we will expand our range with one more product offering, which will further drive, which I think will further boost our sales and market share both up in 3-4 months' time.
Got it. That's helpful. And if you could just clarify the export revenue and the spares revenue for the quarter, please.
Yeah, so the spares revenue in totality was close to about 1300 crores, and domestic was close to about 1000 to 1050 crores, and the exports revenue in exports revenue is close to about $450 million. Yeah,
got it. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Binay from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Congratulations for a very good set of numbers despite the adverse mix that we were seeing. First question is on the electric vehicle side. You talked about 15,000 volumes in Chetak reaching in this quarter. Do you think that that can be manageable despite the fact that your competition is offering quite aggressive discounts today?
That's yeah. I agree that there's a lot of discounting going on. But based on the momentum which we are generating, you know, as things stand now, if I'm not mistaken, already in January, while this discounting is going on, our bookings have hit 11,000 units and there's still a few days to go. But so that's why we're saying that, yeah, we should, on the basis of the new product introduction, maybe selective price support here and there, and the expanding network, you know, we're getting into about 200 cities, is quite a bit. This year, we have opened stores at the rate of one new store every 2.5 days. So it's been a real frantic pace at which these stores are. And if you have visited some of these stores, they're quite elegant, very offering a very nice retail environment to the customer. And now all this is going to be leveraged. So we feel that, yes, 15,000, bit of a stretch given the circumstances, but certainly something which is within the grasp.
Secondly, linked to that, I think Dinesh made a comment about, you made a comment about another launch coming up. So let's look 2 years out. How many EV two-wheeler models in the portfolio are you working on, including KTM, Bajaj? Broadly as a number, you know, like how many product offerings will be there 2 to 3 years down the line, just to get a sense on direction.
See, a lot of this depends on how the industry moves. At the end, today, the industry is at 75,000 units per month, right? And just launching more and more products does not actually increase your share at all. You have to be able to sub-segment this and launch meaningful and relevant products which are meaningful to that particular sub-segment.
Correct.
At 75,000, it is not as if there are too many segments which exist over there. So we have some scenarios in our mind. We are working with, you know, consultants and there is a very focused product development team and exercise which is taking place, which is trying to imagine the different scenarios on how the industry will shape up and what kind of sub-segments will grow. So our strategic approach is to identify the nascent segments and launch products which are specific to those segments rather than just keep on launching variants. You know, we had an issue with the existing Chetak, which we have plugged, which I just described. There's a new one which is coming. And then let us see how the segments go and then we will position our products over there. So I can't give you an exact number. There are I mean, there are many, many products which are in the anvil, but they will be put into the market based on the maturity of the development.
And will it be fair to say that even the profitability point will be largely linked to scale-up? Because if you see, there is scale, there is a supply chain or EV components, and there's battery prices. The battery prices have started to come down. In fact, I think there's a lot of excess battery supply today in the industry. So that should be a tailwind in 24. So will the EV profitability then more rely on scale build-up and then other EV component localization?
Yeah, so it will be a combination. It will be, like you said, there are certain efficiencies which come with scale. There is a certain forecast of the way the cell costs are moving. So that will add to it. There is also, you know, the opportunity with the portfolio expanding, we can sort of try and improve the blended ASPs. But a lot also depends on how competition plays. We obviously can't take the pricing decisions in isolation. We will have to balance competitive position, growth, and profitability. As we go forward, this is a very dynamic balance which we will have to. And of course, then there is this whole factor of the FAME availability and competitive response to how the FAME scenario unfolds, whether it will be maintained, whether it will be reduced, or whether it will vanish. So all these things go into the pot And that from that will emerge the profitability situation.
And secondly, just on Triumph, Rakesh, you mentioned 20% market share. I'm sorry, I couldn't catch. Oh, 20% market share was where for Triumph?
So, you know, we had overall in 41 cities, out of which 10, 11 we have entered, I think, only in November, December. So, to really understand the performance, we are not looking at a market share. It's like we are doing, let's say, 2,800, 3,000 units in a classic 250-500cc industry of about 70,000 units. So we can say that we have 4-5% market share. But that doesn't really understand how it works. All those markets where we are there for 3-4 months now, how are we doing over there? So let's take a Bangalore. Bangalore is a very important market because it's, you know, an early mover market. People are very open to new introductions, etc. There in terms, just for Bangalore city, we have reached a 20% market share. Let's take Kerala. Kerala is the heartland of, you know, again, classic bikes, 250cc to 500cc. We are in two cities now for 2-3 months, which is Trivandrum and Kochi. We have, I don't exactly remember, but we are between 15 to 20%. You know, in somewhere we are 15 and somewhere we are 20, something like that. So we are 15 to 20%. So we are looking at market share achievement city by city to understand the reception of the product. And that's what I meant. So when I gave you those markets, they were retail market share specific to those cities.
And lastly, any order book number on Triumph now?
No, it's no order book now. That phase is over. Now the, it is available off the shelf. People come in and, you know, they buy and it gets delivered.
Right, right. So now it's more like a built-up stage. No, great.
Supply chain has caught up with it, so including exports. So, you know, it's available off the shelf.
And it's just one last question, Rakesh. I can't resist myself. What will be the big risk in 2024? You know, because your exports are, in a way, coming off on a low base. Indian two-wheeler market is just starting to turn. So what do you think will be the big risk to 2024 versus 2023 that we should monitor? Downside risk.
See, frankly speaking, whether exports due to geopolitical and macroeconomic reasons will devolve into a more difficult scenario is certainly something which we keep thinking about and which we keep monitoring. And in when it comes to domestic, let's see what the how the elections behave and whether you know the economy gets. We are not reading any. We're not seeing any dark clouds on the horizon at this point of time. All things are manageable. Like Dinesh had said, there are some costs which are going up. But there is no major dislocation which is expected. But yes, one very important event to watch is, you know, how the elections shape up and what kind of implications there are. But those are the two things I would sort of single out at this point of time.
Thanks for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Gunjan from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, team, for taking my question. I have two follow-ups. Firstly, on the export business, you mentioned that, you know, LATAM, Middle East are some of the markets which have done very well. Is it? Can you talk about how the geographic mix looks like now on the exports in terms of Southeast Asia, Africa? And also, if you can talk a little bit more about Nigeria, I mean, has there been any change in the trend on the ground? And if not, what really changes the sentiment back in the market, or you see, you know, it's going to be slow grind up and can take much longer?
So, the approximately the mix is obviously, you know, Africa, which was thrusting at 55% or so, is now 48-45%, and with Latin America used to be 16-17%, it has now crossed 20 and become 25%. South Asia is about 15-18%, 16%. Yeah, so, MENA is 9%. Middle East and North Africa is 9-10%. So that's the kind of shift. Africa is, like I said, about at 50% of its peak rate. South Asia is at 70% of its peak rate. Latin America is at 107% of its peak rate, and Southeast Asia is also at, I think, about 103% of its peak rate. So, but obviously, you would have totaled up the figures. These are adding up to only the ones which are crossing their previous peak rates are adding up to only 35%. The bulk is still in South Asia and Africa, which is down either 50 or 30%. So that is what is dragging it down. Nigeria is at, we used to do sort of in a good sell 50,000 units per month of Boxer, and now we are doing 20,000-25,000 units, so it's still up 45-50%. The issue is, basically the issue is the devaluation, which has been very, very sharp, as you know. The government there is playing for the longer term, and it's not so easy to correct all these excesses of the past. The convergence between the black market, or let's say the street rate, and the official rate is narrowing down. And and they're going down that path. But till the time, it's taking time for them to come to grips with that. They don't have that kind of a control. It's not, the institutions are not such, as the economy side is not such, where all the fiscal and monetary levers are in full control. So that is why it is taking a lot of time for this thing to get corrected, for people to, start to feel better about the economy. But the customer is very resilient and has continued to purchase. Hopefully, the resilience will lead to better acceptance of the rate, and normalcy will return. And it will suffer. There is no singular event to watch out for, like you also mentioned. It will be a grind-up. It will be slow and steady movement up. I certainly don't think that there is a silver bullet or a lightning rod which will just change the whole thing in Nigeria. It will be a progressive improvement.
And any plans on the exports for the Chetak? Because I think, given that we already have a fairly good presence in terms of reach in some of the export markets, how are we approaching that as an opportunity?
We have got a three-pronged approach, or a three-horizon approach. There are markets we have identified for sort of entry within the next 9 months or so. We have a cluster of countries where we have to prepare a few things, because you have to be deal with the new telemetry, telecom, data management with the customer, etc. All these things. We have a cluster of countries which we think we should enter in by year, let's say beyond 9 to 18 months, and then there is a horizon 3, which is beyond 18 months. But for which some of the actions we have to take now. Even if we have to enter a country 18 months later, we have to start taking some actions now. So we've got these clusters grouped. We want to, I think in the new fiscal year, maybe in the first half, we will see some solid entries. We have shipped out some products, but they are more on a sampling and market test basis. But in terms of a proper, rigorous launch, I would say it will be in the first half of next year.
Okay, just last question from my side. We keep hearing this CNG bikes over and over again in the press. If you can sort of, run us through the thought process and, how viable it is. Is it something that we should, think about coming through in next 2-3 years? Any thoughts around that?
Well, the fundamental thing is that for some inexplicable reason, the fantastic work which has happened on the development of the CNG network across the country has been quite underwritten and under-talked about. The from almost next to nothing, we have 4,000 pumps in 335 cities which are serving industrial, household and transport sector. This is a very important infrastructure on which we can build things. We have already leveraged this. We've been able to leverage this with our three-wheeler business. You know, the rapid rise of the three-wheeler market share. Today, now CNG is taking 60% of the three-wheelers are based on CNG. And the reason for that is that compared to diesel, the operating economics for a driver are extremely beneficial. The payback for a CNG three-wheeler is 6 to 9 months' time. So it's a win-win. It's a win for the driver. It's a win for the country because it uses the network and, you know, it's polluted twice, it's less. And it's a win for Bajaj Auto at least because we've got 85% market share of the CNG. So it begs the question. And I'll tell you one thing. Compared to CNG three-wheeler, the proposition for an electric three-wheeler is that much diluted. But of course, when you compare electric three-wheeler to diesel or to petrol, there is a very, very compelling reason to shift. But not so when it comes to CNG. So therefore, with this infrastructure in place, with the car guys doing this, infrastructure is in the place. The in terms of pollution compared to petrol, CNG is far superior. The requirement of a motorcycle to travel longer distances and not be bothered about discharging and all that are far simpler when it comes to CNG. So it begs the question, then why not a CNG motorcycle? And therefore, we are working on a CNG motorcycle. I cannot tell you the precise time, but you will definitely see it in FY25, not in 2-3 years' time, but in the next fiscal.
Got it. Thank you so much. I'll join back with you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Aman from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and the detailed commentary. I just want to go back to the exports. Around 6 to 9 months back when we were discussing exports, I think the main issues were inflation, which was impacting demand, and obviously currency, which was impacting supply. Today we have the additional issue of the Red Sea. Looking at it right now, which out of these three is the most important one, or in terms of driving demand? And B, given that we have this additional issue coming up, should we temper our expectations on near-term export recovery, or you'd still think that despite this, the quarter-on-quarter recovery which we have been seeing and which you have been talking about is something that is still achievable?
See, if you mean the near-term to be meaning current month and month plus one, if that is your definition of near-term, certainly the Red Sea imbroglio is casting a shadow because there are shipping line interruptions, etc. But now it's anyway. Now I'm hoping that it doesn't move into a war zone or something. See, what happens whenever the shipping cycle gets interrupted? The issue is not just the liners. The issue is that the container locations get imbalanced, and it is not easy to find containers. That takes a little bit time to resolve. This happened in a massive way during COVID. You know that most of the containers are stuck in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and there was nothing available in Bangladesh and all that. So people find the container mismatched over here. To some extent, that is what has happened, because suddenly the shipping times have increased from 3 weeks to 6 weeks for that time, let's say. So, but it's not as severe, and it is isolated, so it's not as severe as the COVID time. So therefore, we are hoping the shipping not resolve itself. The container availability resolves itself. The other two impacts of Red Sea are on the shipping duration increasing, and the costs going up, right? The freight rate to BP. Both those can be adjusted on pricing and on availability of and you know ordering patterns to deal with the delays. So if the conflagration does not widen and become more serious, this issue we should be able to get out of in 2 to 3 months, right? But fundamentally, if God were to give me a wand, magic wand, I would say, please get me rid of this inflation and this the availability of the dollars, you know. That, of course, you know, the whole process of letters of credit being opened, and then after that, they've been confirmed and all that. The whole financial system is in quite a bit of a pressure. It is taking longer than we had expected. So we had thought that every quarter will be a 10% improvement. Now we saw that this quarter is only a 2% improvement. Maybe the next quarter will be also, thanks to the Red Sea, there's that will be a 2 to 5% improvement. We'll have to see with each month. I cannot give you an exact number now. But it will be in that kind of a zone. So our thing is that, okay, maybe not 10%, but let's try to improve quarter 4 over quarter 3.
Sure, that's helpful. It's good to know that you're still looking at an improvement, even if it's a low-end improvement. My second question is just, you know, on the profitability. I mean, historically, if you look at the pecking order of different segments, I mean, your commentary has indicated in the past that the domestic two-wheeler business was at the bottom of the pecking order of profitability. Would it be fair to say that because of the way your mix has changed and your market share has improved in the 125cc plus category, the domestic two-wheeler profitability has improved, and is it now equal to the export two-wheeler, or would it still lag? Some color would be helpful.
Well, you know, our profitability over 2 years, the biggest swing which we have seen is actually in domestic motorcycles. It is I'm talking of not profitability, I'm talking of the profit, the EBITDA, the absolute EBITDA. The biggest swing which you see, the delta, is actually in domestic motorcycles. And that's, like you said, entirely because of the makeover in the portfolio and the mix change. Compared to overall exports is still higher.
Yeah. No, so I think to add to what Rakesh has just said, clearly if you go to look at the margin improvement on two counts, one is, of course, the fact that commodity benefits and operating leverage have really benefited all business lines. So really the rising tide on that has benefited each of the businesses. But purely from a mixed movement standpoint, domestic motorcycles has clearly gained during this period of time. Exports, your question very simply answered, exports continues to remain more profitable at this point of time. Okay. Because I think this has been bolstered by improved dollar realizations.
Understood. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Hitesh Goel from CLSA India. Please go ahead.
So, sir, questions have been asked. Thank you.
Thank you. We move on to the next participant. Next question is from the line of Kapil Singh from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, sir. On Triumph, I wanted to check what are the volume targets here and the 100 cities that we are trying to reach by Q4, what percentage of the market would they cover?
These 100 cities would then cover 50% plus of the market. 4 tracks.
Yeah. And now on the volume target, what is the aspiration to reach by end of the year or next year?
See, we are we've not worked out the exact target. We are capacity wise, we are planning now, including exports, to go up to we are at 10,000, and then we are planning to go up to 20,000 and 30,000 during the course of the year. And so we will, then we will see how this rollout goes, because in the case of Triumph, it is also a host of customer engagement activities which we feel that we have to start to open up the moment we have reached a critical mass in about 50-60 cities, so that we can start to make brand also a reason for the customer to start with. We've got a very, very powerful.
Hello.
Stay connected. The line for the management dropped. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay connected while we rejoin the management back to the call. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We have the line for the management reconnected. So you may go ahead.
So I don't know which point we got disconnected, but I would say our plan for Triumph is not really driven by volumetric goal on the sales side month after month. We have planned for right now a capacity of 10,000. This is being increased to 20,000, and then progressively 30,000 in the first half of the next year. This, of course, also includes exports. A very important target now for the team is to start to make the Triumph brand very, very real for potential customers, for them to experience this really authentic, classic heritage brand through direct engagement. So we are trying to build these enablers of growth, which is a very nice shopping environment, good product portfolio, right now 2, slowly will be increased to 3, and a great engagement in line with the brand position.
Okay. Sir, and also on the domestic two-wheeler market, could you give us an update on the new launch plan? Also would like you to reflect on the strong success we have seen in the 125cc segment. Really, what really has worked in last 1 or 2 years for us? And, there is more competition coming as well. So how do you think about this segment? And also the 100cc segment, is it something which basically trying to understand whether you are comfortable with the way things are going right now? Because 100cc still forms almost half of the motorcycle market. So are you going to look at it more aggressively or not?
So, one thing which has really worked for us in the 125cc segment is we were very early to spot the rise of the 125cc segment. When the BS6 related costs went up, we knew that the 150cc costs were going up much more because of the ABS, etc. And therefore, this combined effect of ABS and BS6 would increase the prices of 150 and create an opening for 125. That is why we extended the Pulsar. And Pulsar, as you know, is a very, very powerful brand. And so this segment, we are straddling through...
Participants, please take connected. The line for the management dropped. Participants, thank you for your patience. The line for the management is reconnected, so please continue.
Yeah, so what I was saying is that we spotted the segment early. This segment has got customers who are wanting to be, pure commuters, slightly elder in age profile, to very sporty and youthful customers. Now, if you see, we are the only ones who straddle the whole spectrum. So we have got a Pulsar 125 for a person who is purely commuting based, and we've got a Pulsar NS 125, with upside down forks, LED headlamps, very best in class power, and all these features for the very youthful college going youngster. Now, this coverage of this different sub segments within the 125 segment is about 260,000-270,000 units now. The size of the segment. This coverage of the segment puts us in a very, very good position to be able to continue to drive growth. And that is the reason why, we are outstripping the industry growth. If you take us out and like Dinesh said, if you compare rest of the industry with our performance, then we are 6 times faster than rest of the industry. And that is because we've got a Pulsar for each type of customer over there. And that is the campaign we've set, the Pulsar for every maniac. And then you've got all these go-to-market issues. So that strategy has really worked out for us. Early mover, sub-segmenting, and putting a Pulsar, which is a very good brand name, putting a Pulsar, relevant Pulsar to, for each segment. And nobody has that kind of a spread, if you see. I think we've got 7 or 9 models from 125cc to 200cc compared to other 3 or 4. Something like that.
Yes. And sir, can you also talk about the new launch plan and any thoughts on the 100cc segment?
Sorry, that was an important one. Yeah, the new launch plan is that every month you will see 2 or 3 upgrades between now and April, May. And we are hoping to present a bigger Pulsar in the first quarter, hopefully, of next year. It's a breathtaking pace. You will, it's a non-stop mania as our team is calling it, and nothing like new products and upgrades to excite the upper half of the industry. In the 100cc segment, the issue is that we are constantly seeking the right balance between the triad of growth and, or let's say the volumes and market share, and profitability. We are not wanting to approach, we have tried this 3-4 years back of looking at it only from the lens of price, and then we have seen that it is a red ocean out there if you just want to go purely on a price basis. The most effect, while we have a good play in the 100cc segment through our Platina, which is giving us a 10-12% market share in the 100-110cc segment. But given the fact, the demographics of our country, given the fact that, you know, the economic backdrop is improving and we are finally emerged, even this segment is emerged from the shadows of COVID, we feel that it is a better strategy to invade the segment from outside the segment, to pull up the people into 125cc. And some of it is happening with the Pulsars. We are looking at programs where we will be able to offer very appealing products to people who are in 100cc to and migrate them upwards. Instead of, you know, matching the product and price of a leader or discounting the price of a leader, which becomes red ocean. We want to stay away from that kind of a strategy, being from being a me too. You can see recently some competitors have launched Me 200cc, they go nowhere. And we're not prepared to get into the red ocean just for volumetric gains. And it may be just 50% in volumetric terms, but it's much smaller in terms of the profit pool which it offers. And because it's much smaller in terms of profit pool it offers, we're not ready to bleed to just get some volumetric gains. We will invade this segment from outside the segment from adjacent to the segment. And you will see as the year unfolds, the new fiscal unfolds, our attempts at that.
Thank you very much, sir. Look forward to that and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Aditya Jhawar from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Congratulations on scaling up the two-wheeler volume. It will be great if you can help us understand that how are we thinking on profitability on E2 wheelers, considering, you know, lithium prices have been coming down and with improving scale and PLI benefit. Any milestones on profitability on gross margin level and EBITDA you'd like to share?
Okay, so I think that I think Rakesh answered this in part earlier, but you're right that we're seeing lithium prices coming off. Also, I think the full effort on the R&D front and on product is starting to show up on some savings. So we definitely are sitting on a better margin profile relative to where we might have been about 6 to 9 months back. Right. Having said that, there is still some amount of work to do before we start to reap the full benefits of the battery cost savings. So that's one piece which is there. Obviously, with growing volume, we are getting some amount of operating leverage, but you realize that as Bajaj Auto, we don't have an excessive amount sunk into fixed costs this time because we're clearly leveraging the wider organization as far as establishment is concerned. So it's really on specific facilities that we've put up for Chetak and the E2 wheelers on which we need to really manage the fixed cost base. But that's not really the highest amount. I think much of the profitability will go behind product, how we play a fuller portfolio and try and drive better ASP whilst we really reap the benefits of falling lithium prices. I think the big element on the horizon for us to also watch for is what will happen to industry pricing, as indeed our own pricing, because we will want to remain very competitive, given our aspiration. And so what will happen to industry pricing as FAME gets reset, and whichever way it gets reset. We saw what happened in June when FAME subsidy was pared down and what it led to on pricing. So very mindful of that, we will retain competitiveness, and that could mean that there might be an impact on pricing and therefore margin. But that's something to be watched for. In the meantime, the big levers of margin improvement will be, of course, growing scale, defraying fixed costs over larger volume, product benefits coming out of work that is happening on R&D, and really benefiting from falling lithium prices on the battery.
Yeah, that's helpful, Dinesh. Final question is on PLI certification. Where are we on that? Any timeline that you can share, and how many products and you plan to get in this fiscal year?
Just to be sure, was your question on the PLI certification?
Yeah.
Okay, so PLI certification applications have been made to the testing agency. In our case, ARIA is the relevant testing agency. Applications have been made for the electric two-wheelers and the electric three-wheelers, and they're fairly advanced stages of engagement with the testing agency for certification. You know, we're hoping that all going well, it should see the light of the day in the course of the current quarter. But there is a process that we need to follow, and so one is only hoping that it happens sooner than later. But all applications for both the electric passenger three-wheeler, the electric cargo three-wheeler, and on Chetak are already in and pending at the moment with the testing agency.
Perfect. That's it for me. All the best.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as the last question. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the call. With this, we can take the pending questions that we have maybe after half an hour from now. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Bajaj Auto Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.